to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn with the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Lauren Roche. Lauren is the best-selling author of two books and is also a physician and motivational speaker based in Auckland, New Zealand. Her autobiography, Bent Not Broken, tells her story of overcoming tremendous difficulties in her journey from prostitute to physician. Welcome, Lauren.
Hiya, Joanna.
It's great to have you here, and reading your website and stuff about you, it's just so interesting. So maybe you could just start by telling us a bit about your background and your own story behind your books.
Sure. I was born in 61, and my parents were both really intelligent people who weren't very well educated for their intellect. And I grew up not expecting to ever be smart or to go to university or even to do well at school. Mum and Dad were both junkies and alcoholics. Mum was particularly bad. And by the time I reached 14, Mum had been in and out of court and in and out of a psychiatric institute to try and break her addictions. But when I was 14 and Mum was 32, she committed suicide. And at that stage, I dropped out of school because I just didn't see the point of anything anymore. I worked for a while as a cleaner in a hospital. And then at 16, I stowed away on a ship to America, hiding in a ship for 3 weeks. And when I got there, I had sort of no money and no contacts. So I hitchhiked around the States, got raped by some guys in a car, got picked up in a bar and put in the Dallas County Jail, and was eventually deported back to New Zealand. I got a job in McDonald's, became pregnant to the manager, and then because I wanted to keep my baby, got a job as a fire-eating stripper in a strip club. when my tummy was too big to do that, because I had to wear a G-string, I went out on the streets and worked as a hooker. When Christopher was born, I knew that I had to make some changes, and I tried, but the lure of the money and the camaraderie of the whole sex industry just drew me back to that. Christopher was looked after by my grandmother during that time, and at 19, nearly 20, I attempted suicide, spent my 20th birthday in the psych unit, and in there had a bit of an epiphany. And that was that if I was going to do anything with my life and do more with my life than my mum had, I had to get an education. So I went back to high school, and while I was there, I realised that I was really good at sciences. And I'd always had a great love of people, and I thought a way to marry those would be to enter the health field. I wanted to be a doctor because I wanted to do something that was big enough to nullify all the bad stuff I'd done. And to me, being a healthcare assistant or a nurse just wasn't big enough. So I went to med school. Shortly before I went there, I had a second son. His father was a detective senior sergeant in the drug squad. And I thought that was really screamingly funny that I, as a former sex worker, was bonking a policeman. our son Paul was born intellectually handicapped, and I started med school when he was 8 months old. So the story is really one of somebody who doesn't expect very much in life, who's had a childhood with neglect and abuse in it, and who reaches her own kind of epiphany, realizing that she's going on the wrong track, and tries to pull it all in. And being someone who believes in aiming high, I went for and became a doctor.
Wow. It's an amazing story. And I mean, I know you have to tell it a lot, but it doesn't change, you know, what you've gone through in your life, which, you know, makes me immediately grateful for my life. But you've achieved so much, and it's just amazing. So I guess my questions, and I guess maybe being English, I feel bad even asking you some of these things, but it's an interview.
You can
always refuse. But I guess the first question is, you've said things there that, you know, you've laid bare your life, yeah. You know, and do you ever feel like you've revealed too much about your life to strangers, or is this something that you're doing to help other people?
I'm doing it to help other people. The only thing I regret is that in laying bare my own life, I've revealed an awful lot about other people's lives, and some of them have been unhappy about that. I talk a lot about my mother and her problems in my first book, Bent Not Broken, and a couple of her sisters were extremely angry about that because Mum was dead and she couldn't defend herself. And as in a lot of families where there's been abuse and drug addiction and alcoholism, there's also a lot of denial. And one of Mum's sisters pretty much publicly said that I was making things up and was really upset when my two sisters backed my version of what had happened.
So have you got any tips for other people who might be writing personal memoir on that? Yeah.
I think be very clear with your family about what's happening. Corroborate your story with people where you can. Now, if you're not really sure about something, ask other people. But in saying that, there's an incident I relate in my book where when I was 14, my mother tried to strangle me, and my sister Tracy was witness to what had happened. Now, I clearly remember that I was lying on the floor with my mum straddling me and strangling me. Tracy clearly remembers that I was standing and the same thing was happening. So we're both witnesses to the same really traumatic thing, but we've both got pretty different pictures of what happened. And I guess that's the nature of memory.
Yeah.
The stories that you tell may not always completely meld with what other people say, but be prepared for backlash.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess a related question is, your book covers topics that some people might judge you on. You know, you talk about, you know, drugs and a suicide attempt and the sex industry, which, you know, might make some people, you know, judge you in that way. And yet you're a medical doctor. So how has your book actually helped or hindered your medical career?
I don't think it's hindered it at all, although I was very careful that the story didn't come out until after I'd graduated.
Ah, okay.
It was important to me. I didn't want to be judged on my way through medical school as someone who'd done this stuff. So I kept pretty low, a pretty low profile at med school. When my story first broke, a young woman said to her mother, "I can't believe you took me to a prostitute," which I thought was really sweet. And in many ways, it's actually helped my career. As a general practitioner, I was a doctor that people in my small town sent others to if those people had problems with addiction or rape or depression. And even people with gender identity disorder were sent to me because people knew I wouldn't judge them.
No, that's amazing. And did your writing help you personally to deal with your past? Was it a form of therapy?
Yes, it started out as a form of therapy. I never meant to share it with anyone. And as I wrote stuff, I started to remember good things. You know, I'd forgotten a lot of good stuff about my mum. Because she died when I was an adolescent, there was an awful lot of turmoil surrounding her death and a lot of anger. And as I started to write, I remembered the really neat things that Mum had done. Like when we were in Australia, all the six kids piling out of the car and rolling around in the grass. And Mum saying, "Oh, green grass, New Zealand grass. I just love New Zealand green." And it was a long time before I realised that New Zealand green was the marijuana that she liked, and she was making a little joke about grass. But at the time, as an innocent child, you know, I thought it was just grass. The way unlocking the memories and sitting down to write them down actually unlocked good stuff.
And do you, when you talk to people who are, you know, maybe have problems, do you encourage them to write, or does that come into your work at all?
Yes, it does. I think writing is a very, very therapeutic tool. if you write something, nobody else has to read it, and you have power over what's in the page. You can set down your jumbled thoughts on paper, and then you can rip them up, or you can burn them, or you can rub them out and start again. And just the act of removing painful memories from your head and getting them down on paper allows you to make a kind of sequence of them. To make sense of them.
And did you, when you were writing, I mean, did you study writing memoir, or you know, is it something you learnt as you went along?
Well, something I learned as I went along. I belonged to a group which is no longer active, www.newwriters.com, and just submitted little pieces of story, some fiction, some non-fiction, and got some feedback on those. And that was a helpful thing. I think it is really helpful to belong to some sort of writing community, even if it's an online one where you don't meet face-to-face. I have lots of books on writing, but I've bought those since I published the books because I wanted to get better.
Mm. So you're still trying to improve your writing craft?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah. And is that because you're looking to write more books?
I will write a third volume of autobiography, My Life with Poodles. I don't know if you can hear them, but there's poodles. but to me, I love to read a well-crafted story. I'm a word nerd. I love the way words come together.
Mm.
And I would like to write something that resonated and was almost symphonic in the way it was put together. I just love to do that.
And I guess, you know, another question is you went through medical school, which I'm sure everybody appreciates is really, really hard work. And I think I read on your blog, you're studying again for something else.
I'm doing some theological study.
Oh, yes, that was it. I have a degree in theology.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it's crazy. You know, so why are you doing that? And, you know, how is study such an important part of your life?
Since I discovered that I had a brain, I've had to use it. I find that if I'm not studying or learning something, my brain gets bored and I become more introspective and self-critical. But when I'm studying and learning and keeping my brain moving, I'm a much happier person. I was baptized in a Baptist church about 2.5 years ago, and that reignited an interest in Christianity and in Christ. And I'm just learning about the Bible and learning about stuff. In my job as a physician in a hospice, spirituality is really important. And I think it's important to know what you believe, not so that you can dump it all over other people, but so that you can approach people wherever their spiritual level is and talk on that level.
And that's a really good point. And I just want to step back. I just had another question there about, I mean, you obviously talked about writing as therapy. If other people do that, when should they go ahead and publish that therapy, and when should they keep it private?
They should always keep it private if having it made public would be damaging to them. Some people will write some incredibly personal things, and I've read some journals that patients have given to me, and they've asked whether or not I think they should publish them. And the stuff in there comes from a very wounded part of them that they haven't had healing for yet. And I think that it's wrong to put stuff out there when it's so raw, because sometimes it can deepen the hurt rather than helping to resolve it.
Yeah, that's really good advice, because I, you know, a lot of people do have these, you know, problems in their life and they write a lot about them, but, you know, it's not necessarily a good thing to put it out there.
The therapy is not in publishing it, it's in writing it. It's in getting it out of your head and onto the page. The publishing is incidental, and I don't think you should publish until you have a sense that you have moved beyond the hurt that you write about, on some level.
That's excellent. So I guess moving on from that, can you talk a bit about your publishing experience? Because you're in New Zealand, and I was alerted to you by an American company. Yeah. And I've heard you've been in England as well. So how does that all work? How did you get published and how is it going?
Bent Not Broken, I peddled around about three different publishing companies in New Zealand, one of which was Penguin. And Penguin wrote back this really lovely, polite letter saying that while it was a great story and well written, they didn't believe it would sell more than 400 copies. Therefore, they wouldn't publish it. Mm. Finally, it was published by a small publishing company called Steele Roberts. And they'd always worked with beautiful arty and poetry books. And this was quite a departure for them. It was fabulous to see the book in print. Mm. And Steele Roberts worked hard to get it picked up by overseas publishers. It was picked up in the second year by a British publisher, and again, another small publisher. And I did two promotional tours to the UK, promoting the two books. On a funny kind of level, the first book, when I headed over to the UK, on the way, the United States declared war in Afghanistan. Mm. And when I got to the UK, there were a whole lot of television interviews and things that were set up, and they were all cancelled because the news was on the war in Afghanistan. The second time I went to the UK, the US invaded Iraq the day after I got there. And I had this interview set up with Richard and Judy, who are pretty famous.
Oh, yes. Yeah, huge. Yeah.
And,
huge.
Yeah, and I got a phone call saying, well, listen, do you have any family in Iraq? Because if you do, we can run your interview, you know, because we can put Iraq in the story. But if you don't, I'm sorry. You're out of luck. And it's like, oh, George Bush, I hate that man.
Oh, no, so you didn't get on Richard and Judy?
No, I didn't. Oh. I did a lot of other interviews. I did a lot of other interviews, but the Richard and Judy one didn't come off, and that was disappointing.
Mm, I imagine, yeah. That's like the Oprah stories when Oprah was cancelled. You know, people say that happens as well.
Yes. Oh, it's upsetting.
I hope you had a good holiday in England at the same time.
I did. I actually toured a lot of women's prisons and a few universities there, mostly the community universities, and it was fabulous. Mm. In one of the women's prisons, it was quite far north in England, and I actually couldn't understand people's accents, and I was afraid that the women in this prison wouldn't understand me. And I stood at the front of the chapel, and I trembled, and it was obviously, you know, very apparent to the women, because one put her hand up and she said, "Excuse me, miss, I wanted to be a prostitute once, but the men paid me to go away." And everybody laughed, and it broke the ice, and everything was fine.
Oh, wow. And you know, that's amazing you saying that, because I guess a lot of authors think about having a speaking career with their book, but probably women's prisons are not top of many people's lists.
No, but it's fascinating. It is really neat, because there are lots of things in my story that resonated with the women who'd ended up in prison.
Mm.
And yeah, it was a really neat thing to have done.
Mm. No, that's amazing. And now, of course, are you being published in the US, or you how's that work?
Yeah, after the UK, I was published in Germany, then China, then Taiwan, then Sweden. So the book's been translated several times. Mm. And then Sam in the US, a man who has published other books, read my book in New Zealand and contacted me and asked if I would like to be published in the US. And, of course, the answer wasn't no. I was quite excited at the prospect. But what he wanted was an audio book. And I had never imagined that I could speak an audio book, because I think my voice is a bit monotonous. But I just got up at 2:30, 3 o'clock every morning and taped at the kitchen table in my house. And with his editing, it's turned out to be a great production.
Wow. And how long did it take you to record the book?
Probably 3 weeks.
3 weeks of getting up at 2:30?
Yep. Yep.
To do before work, presumably.
To do before work. I found that after about an hour and a half of taping, my voice got tired and I got a bit more monotonous. So, yeah, a bit of it was retaping things that hadn't come out quite right, or where I'd got my tongue tied.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience. It made me relive some of the emotions, which I think is a good thing. I think it's good for an author to read their own work, because There is something so true about the emotion that you feel when you're reliving things.
And just for people listening, Sam has actually given us a special code to get a discount on the audiobook. So for anyone listening, I'm going to put that on the blog post when this goes out, so you can get a discounted audiobook if anyone would like that. So when you did that, I guess, you know, because that's something I talk to people a lot about, is recording their own book. So why did you do it yourself as opposed to getting a professional, I guess?
Well, I wasn't sure that I'd be able to do it myself, but Sam said, give it a try and we'll see what it sounds like. And he put it out to a few people in the US who listened to it and said, you wouldn't want a professional to do this. This is really good. Nice. It was lovely.
No, and that's interesting, because it's your story, and obviously it's an incredibly personal story. Having it in your own voice probably does make it much more effective.
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Mm. So you would recommend that other people try that with their own books?
Absolutely. Mm. It's a really neat experience, and it actually makes you go back and read what you've written again. And that's both good and bad. I saw one or two places where the language was quite chunky, and I wished I'd written it differently, but...
yeah. It was a few years ago now, wasn't it?
It was a few years ago now, yes.
Yeah, so probably your writing has changed.
It has, yeah, and my perspective on some things have changed a bit. I've mellowed a little bit with time.
Mm. Mm. So I guess how are you marketing yourself and the book still, especially when you're based in New Zealand?
I still do a few speaking engagements in New Zealand. I have an annual one with the police helping girls who have been sexually abused, and I'm about to start doing that for boys in a sexual abuse camp as well. So I do that. I speak often at high school graduations.
Mm.
Just to let kids know that it doesn't matter what's happened before, that what really matters now is that you take your future and your life in your hands and look after it yourself.
Mm.
And a lot of kids find that a very new way of looking at things. Some people think mum and dad never went past high school. That means I'll never go past high school. But that's like saying mum and dad are accountants, so I have to be an accountant. Well, that's not true. There are times when we have to take our future, our potential, everything in our own hands and look at it as a grown-up and fix the things that need to be fixed. So I like to try and plant the seed in young people's minds that they are not committed to the life they might have thought they were committed to, that they can make change.
Mm. No, that's really marvellous. And when you wrote the book, did you expect it to go this far?
Heck no, no. When Penguin said it might sell 400 copies, I sat down and I thought, how many people have I been to school with and how many do I know? And it wasn't that many, actually, and I thought 400 was pretty generous. But it ended up being the fourth best-selling title in that year, fourth best-selling non-fiction title. And it was neck and neck with Wrestling with the Angel, which was Michael King's biography of Owls Do Cry, her name has escaped me.
Oh, Janet Frame, is it?
Janet Frame.
Mm.
Yes, Michael King's biography of Janet Frame, which was a wonderful book. And to end up neck and neck with that was really neat.
Mm. Yeah, that's amazing. And so how does being an author fit into your overall life since you've done so many other things?
Being an author is important to me. It's important because, in a way, it's a way that I can give back to people. It's a way that at the same time is healing to me. I love to write, and I find that when I'm stressed or worried about something, I can often write it out. Yeah, it's one of the things that I am, you know. I am a mother, a doctor, an Iron Man, an author.
Mm.
It's one of the things I am, and it's important to me.
That's great that you said that, that I am an author thing, because that's something that I used to say to myself before I'd ever written a book, in order to almost create that reality. Is that something that you did as well?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Mm.
I think if you can dream it big enough, you can be it.
Mm.
And positive affirmation is a really important thing. When I was training to be an Ironman, I hadn't ridden a bike for 20 years and I couldn't swim more than about 5 meters without sinking. But I concentrated on, at the end of an Ironman, this guy says, "Lauren Roche, you are an Ironman." And that got me through an awful lot of really rotten training. And in the end, when the guy said it, I can't remember it because I was absolutely knackered.
Yeah, you better just explain what Iron Man is in case anyone doesn't know and are very confused.
Sure, Iron Man's an athletic event where it's a triathlon where you swim 3.8 kilometres, then ride a bike for 180 kilometres, and then run a marathon. And you have 17 hours in which to do it. And I finished in 16 hours, 36 minutes and 38 seconds. I was fourth to last. But in the year leading up to Ironman, I'd learned how to swim, got back on a bike and started running. So it was cool.
You do some big stuff.
Yeah, I like big stuff. I find that big stuff keeps me motivated and excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so you've done some crazy things. Where to next? Because, you know, you're not that old. I mean, you've got years left to go. What's next on your list?
I need to learn how to parallel park.
Okay, that's not big. Park. That's not a big thing. If you live in London for, you know, a year, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, every time I try to parallel park, I end up kind of on an angle with people laughing at me, and I have a very low threshold for people laughing at me at the moment.
That's excellent. There's got to be something else on your list.
I want to finish training in palliative care. I'd like to be a palliative care specialist, which means learning a lot of stuff about hospice. I love the work in hospice. It's fantastic. So I'd like to stay there. One day I'd like to build a house. I'd like to do the Coast to Coast, which is an athletic event, running and cycling and paddling from one side of New Zealand to the other. But the number one thing on my upcoming bucket list is to sit in a garden with hummingbirds.
That's lovely.
I don't know why, but it's important to me. I want to sit somewhere with hummingbirds. So.
And will your next book be a more spiritual book?
It will be. A more reflective book, a more spiritual book. A less hurt book, because there's a lot of hurt and bent in life. There's a lot of joy in them too. I think they're books that sort of take you up and down a lot. I'd like a book that's a bit more even and more centered, but in the same way as the other books, a helping book.
No, that's excellent, and it will probably bring you full circle, won't it, to a place where you are pretty much sorted in your life from what you're talking about.
Yes.
No, that's great. Okay, so finally, we've run out of time and it's been great talking to you. How can people find out more about you and about your books?
I have a couple of websites. There's www.laurenkimroche.com. So that's LaurenKimRoche.com and bentnotbrokenbook.com. We'll take you to a site where you can hear little bits of the reading of Bent Not Broken. You can order it. You can have a look around. Read the blog that I've started to write about writing.
That's excellent.
Enjoy yourself and drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, guts, that's excellent. And I'll put all those links on the post when it goes out. So thank you again for your time, Lauren. That was really amazing.
Thank you, Jo. Thanks heaps.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.